Scottish Mortgage seeks out lateral thinkers like academics, authors, and experts in the industry to shape our investment ideas. Not the usual suspects and narrow mindset of financial analysts and investment industry commentators. That way, we continue to build a portfolio that reflects real-world progress, not financial world noise. Scottish Mortgage is managed by Baillie Gifford. A key information document is available by visiting baillieGifford.com. As with any investment, capital is at risk.
Hello, my name's Jeremy Gordon, and welcome to Citywire's Funds Fanatic Show. I'm very pleased to be joined on the podcast today by Gresham House's Ken Wotton, who runs the firm's £400 million UK Multicap Income Fund. Strong performance in recent years has been helped by his specialism in smaller companies, and he also runs portfolios dedicated to that area, including the Strategic Equity Capital Investment Trust.
Hi, Jeremy, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. Why don't we start with a big trend in the smaller companies sector, takeovers. There's been so much activity in the last couple of years, you know, basically because UK shares have become undervalued. Is that right?
I think that's certainly a part of it. And it's UK shares right across the market cap spectrum that we think are undervalued. And there's lots of data to show that we're at multi-decade discounts for UK equities versus other developed markets, particularly the US market. And that's been the case even despite the drawdowns we've seen in various markets over the last 12 months. The smaller companies area, it typically trades structurally at a discount to larger companies, which means there's even more of a valuation sort of discontinuity in the small end of the market. And what we're seeing and what we have seen over the last 3 years really, but certainly over the last 12 months is either corporate buyers or private equity firms who have built up large war chests of dry powder, spotting the arbitrage that exists between both the UK and other international markets, but also the UK versus private markets, the UK listed area versus private markets.
Yeah.
So when they see that valuation opportunity and you know, look selectively within the UK listed universe and find high quality businesses that may be exposed to structural growth trends rather than be cyclically exposed to the UK economy, actually there's some really exciting opportunities. So I think that's what's really driven the activity. And my personal view is that it's going to pick up significantly in 2023.
It could pick up again.
I believe so. Yeah. Cause we've seen a bit of a hiatus around the mini budget and the bit of turmoil in the debt markets, which I think has caused some potential acquirers to pause and reevaluate. But I think that's, now we've got that settled a little bit, I expect we'll see a resurgence. And, it wouldn't surprise me if 2023 was a much bigger year than 2022 in terms of activity.
Okay. I mean, you did mention it there, but there's been a big jump in interest rates. And when private equity, particularly, debt has fueled quite a lot of these deals since the financial crisis, really. You don't think that could, spark a kind of more cautious period?
I think, that's the reason why there's been a bit of a pause sort of in the fourth quarter of last year.
Yeah.
But we're always seeing some signals that it's starting again already now. I think, the availability of debt and the cost of debt is certainly going to be a factor that could affect pricing. But then the discounts that we're seeing versus private market multiples are so significant now in some areas that even if they can borrow a little bit less and it costs a little bit more, the impact on returns, I think, is massively outweighed by the discounted valuation. So, it's clearly a consideration, but I don't think it's going to stop them from particularly the private equity buyers because they've raised so much money. I mean, there's all sorts of different stats out there about the amount of private equity dry powder globally, but it's sort of well in excess of $1 trillion of commitments to funds that they need to deploy. So I think, that's going to be the bigger factor than the interest rates that they're having to pay on the debt.
Okay. Before we come on to that a bit more, so I mean, this trend has been a helpful tailwind for your fund and rivals. I think the Multicap Income Fund has had 13 takeovers And they tend to be at a significant premium in the last 5 years. But do you think sometimes UK companies have been taken out too cheap?
Yeah, I think there's a real spectrum. we are clearly, as public market investors, we don't want all of our best companies to be taken out at a short-term premium at the expense of long-term opportunity. And we are long-term investors. So, but you know, it's an inevitable consequence of the stock market and equity investors in general not rating some of these businesses appropriately. So, you know, we don't buy companies just because we think they're going to be taken over, certainly not in a short-term view. We focus on the fundamentals of the businesses. We're trying to find high-quality companies in attractive areas with tailwinds to their growth opportunity, with good management teams that can exploit that. And we want to buy them at attractive prices so that we can make a good return. And surprisingly enough, corporate buyers and private equity firms are also looking for high quality companies in good areas that they can buy at attractive multiples. So I guess the trick for us is to find the right businesses. And then, we hope that the stock market will value those appropriately after we've invested. But if the stock market doesn't do that, if it doesn't rate them appropriately, which it currently isn't, then inevitably you'll see takeover interest. And I think that the UK has been very out of favour with asset allocators for a considerable period now, and that's part of what's driven the valuation discounts, because there's been outflows from UK funds. I think one of the catalysts for that changing could well be a resurgence in takeover activity, so really highlighting this big valuation anomaly. Because we would, there are a number of companies that we own where you can point to very specific transactions which are of similar businesses where the whole company has been bought whether by private equity or by corporates at multiples which are now coming up to double the multiples that some of our companies are trading on the market. So that's just too wide. And if the stock market doesn't start to recognize that, then corporate buyers will and private equity firms will. And if they start to match it in a big way, then I think that's a catalyst to sort of focus on the valuation discontinuity, and therefore people will start to allocate back to the UK.
Yeah. I mean, can you talk specifically about some of those companies where you're saying that they're trading on multiples that are half the similar deals that we've seen in private markets?
Yeah. There's two companies specifically I can point to where we are major shareholders. And I think it's important when we talk about our strategy for investing, one of the things that we like, or we're certainly not shy of doing, where we have high conviction, is taking a big equity stake in a company. And if you can do that, then you have a voice in that conversation. So if someone comes along to try and take over a company, if it's the wrong price and it's too low, we can potentially block that if we've got big enough stakes, or certainly have an influence over it. So we have that in the two companies I'm going to mention. So the first one is a company called Medica, which is a healthcare services company. It's a technology sort of underpinned business that is providing outsourced teleradiology services to the NHS, to the health services in Ireland, and also to pharmaceutical and biotech companies in the clinical trial space to support drug development. So it's a business that is growing double digit at the top line. It's international in scope. It's in an area which we don't believe is cyclical. It's structurally growing. Yet the business is valued at a multiple which is about not far off a 50% discount to the multiple that a private equity firm paid for a very similar business that actually competes with Medica in the UK.
Which business is that, sorry?
It's a business called Everlight.
Okay.
We know that a private equity buyer has been prepared in the relatively recent past to pay a much higher multiple for that business. And Medica is the leader in the UK. So, that's not me saying I think Medica will get taken out. That's not why we're investing in it, because we think it can deliver really attractive multi-year growth, and that will drive ultimately a re-rating of the business, and we'll make money that way. But if the market doesn't rate the business appropriately for the growth that it's delivering, then it's clear and obvious company that private equity might be interested in.
Sure. And thanks, Ken. And you mentioned the second name?
Yeah, so the other one is a company called Inspired, which is it's a consultancy business focused on the energy market. So it advises corporates in the UK, so mid to large corporates and larger energy users, on how to optimize their energy procurement so they can get the best deal, and then also how to optimize their energy consumption so they can consume less and therefore in the short term mitigate some of the higher energy prices that we're seeing.
Sounds like a very relevant business for today.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And you've got energy prices are high, which cause people to want to focus more on cost, but also longer term it's about sustainability and carbon reduction as well. So that's a business where, again, there's a similar company. It was actually a smaller competitor in the UK called Zenergy, which got acquired by a private equity firm within the last 12 months at a multiple which is more than double the multiple that Inspired is currently trading on the market. So, again, another sort of data point which just sort of highlights that anomaly that we've been talking about.
Sure. Okay. One other kind of sector actually I wanted to ask you about, because you're quite a big investor in it, is the UK wealth management sector. Now this is, you know, wealth management, financial advice in the UK has seen quite a lot of interest, from corporate buyers, especially. I mean, so last year there was a big deal with Royal Bank of Canada taking over Brewin Dolphin. And you invest quite heavily in this space. I mean, just to reel off a few names, Brooks McDonald is a big position in your Strategic Equity Capital Trust. In other funds, you've got Mattioli Woods, Tatton Asset Management. I mean, I suppose, firstly, what do you think about that trend? And what do you think about valuations and the outlook for that sector today?
Yeah, so I think it's a sector which, as you rightly point out, we've been sort of active investors in for a considerable amount of time. And the reason for that is the big long-term structural trends which have been driving consolidation in that market, and that's increased regulation, and it's a shift towards more individual personal responsibility for sort of retirement planning and long-term sort of management of individual wealth, and that's led to the requirement for advice. But it's also the there are economies of scale to delivering that in terms of buying products, and also defraying the costs of increasing regulation, and regulation is only really going in one direction. So that's some of the long-term structural drivers for growth and consolidation in the sector. And there's a lot of it's quite a fragmented market. It's a huge market, and there are lots of kind of nuances to different business models. And some of the companies you mentioned there that we own are different plays on that, and they don't necessarily compete directly with each other. But as a result of some of those attractions of the sector, as you rightly point out, there has been sort of a lot of consolidation and mergers and acquisitions activity in the space. And again, just the risk of sounding like a broken record, that it's another area where, because of the weakness in ratings of the UK market and small caps in particular, you've got a big discrepancy between the multiples that corporate buyers and private equity have been prepared to pay in this space versus what some of the businesses that you mentioned are trading at. So Brewin Dolphin, national wealth manager, RBC have acquired them on a I think it's 19 times EV EBITDA. We own Brooks McDonald, which is a bit smaller, but it's another national wealth manager. We think it's got some good attractions to it. And again, it's on a rating which is approximately half the rating that Brewin's was taken out at. So, yet again, it's sort of exposing that valuation arbitrage opportunity.
Okay. Well, one other to ask about, a bit different, I think, but is XPS Pensions Group. That's quite a big bet for you. Can you discuss that business and its attractions a bit?
Yeah, I mean, so XPS is an actuarial and pensions consultancy business and administration platform. So it is mainly advising the trustees of defined benefit pensions on various aspects of operating those pensions. So, ranging from the regulatory sort of burdens and requirements that they have, to how to administer them effectively, to how to maximise the investment returns that they can generate, and to ensure that they can support the the pension liabilities that they ultimately have to bear as a pension fund. So you might think that's, you know, pensions is not a particularly exciting area, actuaries have a certain sort of reputation. but you know, I think this is a really exciting area because it's not cyclical. It's a market where, although defined, you know, new defined benefit pensions are extremely rare, the value of the assets and the duration over which those assets have to be planned to meet the liabilities is multi-decade. So there's an opportunity in this market for a considerable amount of time. It's driven by regulation, and there's only more regulation coming down the pipe. So trustees have a lot of things to think about, and they need help to do that. And it's a market which is dominated by the three sort of global mega businesses. And there's an opportunity for XPS to, partly through acquisition and partly through organic growth, to become the clear leader of the next tier. And you know, that's the strategy. So, you know, they're really coming into their own now. The trading is very strong and increasingly topical in the current market. XPS is a beneficiary of inflation.
Okay.
Because it has inflation-linked contracts. So, you know, it is able to grow its revenue through price increases faster than its cost base is going up. So that's pretty rare in this market. And, you know, I think the market's not really currently giving them enough credit for those characteristics.
I suppose another topical thing is LDI, liability-driven investing, which was this strategy a lot of pension funds used or advised to use, which had a meltdown last year. I mean, is XPS kind of exposed to the backlash against that at all?
I think rather than being exposed to the backlash, it's exposed to the opportunity that sort of focus and that discontinuity shows. So I think October last year was one of, if not the busiest month in their history in terms of advice on for trustees on how they should sort of tackle the huge moves in the gilt market. So, you know, and I think there's a quote from one of their consultants, you know, around that time, which is, you know, there's no pension fund in the country that will not end up better funded as a result of what happened. But there were short-term liquidity issues resulting from those contracts. So all of this drives requirement for advice, and I'm sure we'll also drive more regulation in the future. And again, that requires advice. So I think it's been quite positive for them.
Okay. And I suppose, well, stepping back from XPS a bit, but, you know, some of these financial sector businesses and wealth management, you know, this is one of the areas where you're expecting a takeover resurgence this year, or a resurgence of bids, perhaps.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, there are a number of areas where, you know I guess if you have major outflows from funds exposed to UK equities, then when they have to sell, they might be just indiscriminate about that, and that means it leads to everything being derated, and, you know, it's not necessarily selectively focused. So I think what the market's missing is some of these areas where the structural growth trends, where there's M&A activity at much higher multiples, they're still being derated anyway, and that creates a, you know, great opportunity. And as I said, I would expect us to benefit from that over the course of this year.
Sure. So, you know, all your portfolios have broadly been strong performers in recent years, I think particularly the multi-cap income fund. I mean, last year returns were a bit more muted, although, you know, compared to lots of other smaller companies investors, you held up a bit better. Were you happy with last year's performance, and how are you feeling about the outlook?
So taking the multi-cap income fund specifically,
yeah,
you know, we had a modestly down year last year. And if you compare that to the FTSE All Share, that was somewhat disappointing. But when you look at it relative to the UK equity income sector, you know, we were certainly well below the average performer. But, you know, there's really two main reasons for that, which, you know, I'm pretty comfortable with, because,
okay,
you know, it is a small mid-cap centric fund, albeit that it's all cap. We do have sort of mid and large cap names within the portfolio as well. And large cap outperformed small cap materially last year. In fact, if you look at the sort of the real granular data, the top 10 largest market cap companies in the UK, you know, that was the difference between making money and not making money in UK equities last year, because the mega capped, outperformed. And then the second bit is you've got sectors that drove the all share, which we don't invest in. So mining, oil and gas, and banks, you know, they were better performers. And you know, we specifically avoid those sectors, and our investors know that because we've sort of set out our strategy to avoid those areas, which we think there will be periods like last year where that's a headwind to relative performance. But through the cycle, we think we can generate the returns that we're looking for our investors with less volatility and more consistency by avoiding those sectors than having them, because they tend to be more cyclical and more volatile. So, you know, I'm never happy when we lose money in a year, but you know, our fund is doing what it's supposed to do, what we tell our investors it's doing, and we're confident that works over the long term.
Yeah, and so in that fund and your small cap portfolios, I mean, what have you been doing basically? You know, have you been adding to names which did sell off the most? Were you still confident, or
absolutely? Yeah. So you know, for the first half of the year at least, we were our focus was risk assessment and just kicking the tires properly on everything that we already own. So just making sure that you know, the world's changed, the economic environment's different. And whilst we're not macro investors and we're very bottom up, we are macro aware. And we want to make sure that the macro headwinds that we're seeing, we want to make sure we understand how they might affect our portfolio companies. And if there's an issue, then do something about it. So that was our real focus. We did make a number of changes as a result of it, and certain stocks didn't make it and we sold them. But the main, we were fortunate enough, particularly in our multi-cap income fund last year, to have inflows into the fund during a year when you know, the overall sort of trend was big outflows from UK funds. So that put us in a good position to be able to deploy capital when other people were selling. And the sort of first port of call with that was in our existing portfolio where we had high conviction, particularly where they've been derated. You know, we are seeing lots of new opportunities now. We did start to add a few names at the end of last year, but you know, and I would expect turnover probably to be lower looking forward than it was last year, because fingers crossed we're in a slightly more normalized environment now. We have high conviction in the portfolio companies we have. We're confident that they are resilient, as far as we can, we've satisfied ourselves that the economic headwinds are going to be able to sort of trade through those in a way which won't be detrimental to our value, and so that's where we should be initially focusing. And then, but there are increasing number of interesting opportunities beyond the portfolio, and we'll selectively add positions when we see compelling value and a kind of long term opportunity.
Yeah. Okay. You've invested in some alternative investment trusts, for example, Hypnosis Songs in Song Royalties. I mean, are you concerned about those kind of alternative income areas as interest rates rise? I mean, Hypnosis Songs, for example, has had a tough 2022.
Yeah, no, I think I believe in the long term opportunity for that strategy. You know, it's doing something quite different. It was a leader, a first mover in doing something quite different, which is investing in the rights for songs, particularly songwriter rights, which have long duration, and effectively annuity income streams, where because of the expertise of the management team and their connections with the industry, they're able to first of all originate interesting deal opportunities like some of the Fleetwood Mac royalties, etc., which real one-off catalogues, and then also through active management try to drive incrementally additional royalties from them, in an environment where streaming has enabled that to happen, where it's more predictable and where there's more data. So I think I believe in that proposition long term. I think what we might have got slightly wrong is that there were material investors in going into that fund who were investing not purely for the operational opportunity and the long term sort of growth opportunity, but also for the, I guess, uncorrelated income. So I'm happy that the dividend per share that we can drive from that fund is attractive, it's robust, and it will grow over time. You know, at the moment, the fund's gone through a discount. And I think that's more of an opportunity for long-term investors. So, you know, as long as you believe that that income stream is attractive, robust, and growing, and stacks up against just having your money in the bank, then I think it's still a good opportunity.
Okay, that's one you've added to, is it?
Yeah, we have added to.
Okay, thanks. Last question. Just wanted to speak about the Strategic Equity Capital Investment Trust a bit. There's been quite a lot going on with this trust, including a bit of shareholder pushback, we might say, about the persistent discount to the portfolio valuation, which the shares were trading at. Can you bring us up to speed on that a bit, firstly?
Sure. So, you know, I took on managing the trust in September 2020 after Gresham House had won the mandate in a competitive tender to take it on from a previous manager.
Yeah.
You know, it's a trust which really, first of all, it really fits our strategy of taking a private equity approach to public markets. It's a concentrated fund. You know, it's focusing on active engagement. So it's really leveraging the capabilities we have at Gresham House. In fact, we've got a private equity business and you know, the strategy we undertake. And we're happy to take big stakes and sort of get involved in the companies where that's relevant. We think we can add value.
Yeah.
So that's why we wanted it. And that's why I was excited to become the manager. No, because it was an existing trust that we didn't set up. It had a shareholder base which had been sort of evolved over a considerable period, and some of them were happy and some were less so about what strategy and the changes. So there was obviously going to be some I guess churn in the shareholder register.
Yeah.
We were subject to an approach the trust was subject to an approach from another sort of peer investment trust in the UK, Odyssean, correct? And about a possible combination of the two trusts.
Mm.
The board ultimately rejected that approach, but as part of that, of justifying the rejection to shareholders, they sanctioned a number of initiatives to try and tackle the discount, which was, I guess, ultimately why some shareholders were at least considering whether or not it would be a good idea to merge. And that seems to have worked. I mean, the peak discount since I was involved was 25%. It's now sort of around 6-7%. That's been achieved through a combination of, I think, performance, active marketing, an active buyback program by the trust, which is sort of ongoing rather than a big tender offer, and also Gresham House itself committing to reinvest some of our fees into shares through the market on an ongoing basis. So all designed to try and support a 5% discount. So that appears to have worked quite well, and certainly in an environment where over the last 12 months where investment trust discounts have widened materially and UK equity fund discounts have widened materially, ours has gone in the opposite direction. So, you know, it seems to be working.
Okay. And I suppose, well, you know, on the outlook, you're maybe similar things apply to what we've been discussing, but you're excited about that. You think you're finding good value opportunities.
Yeah, look, so it's SEC, Strategic Equity Capital PLC. It's a high conviction concentrated fund. We've got 18 holdings currently. 78% of the value of the trust in terms of NAV is in the top 10 holdings. And those top 10 holdings are businesses which we think are A, sort of high quality businesses with good long-term prospects, but B, the valuations are compelling. And, you know, we talked about some of those holdings today. So XPS, Pensions, Medicare, Inspired Energy, Brooks McDonald, they're all big holdings in that trust, and all of which we think have got significant upside.
Brilliant. Okay. Well, thanks very much, Ken. I think that's all we've got time for today, but thanks very much for joining me on the podcast.
Thank you.
Great. And last thing to say is thanks everyone for listening, and please look out for more of our podcast soon.
Scottish Mortgage seeks out lateral thinkers like academics, authors, and experts in the industry to shape our investment ideas. Not the usual suspects and narrow mindset of financial analysts and investment industry commentators. That way, we continue to build a portfolio that reflects real-world progress, not financial world noise. Scottish Mortgage is managed by Bailey Gifford, A key information document is available by visiting baileygifford.com. As with any investment, capital is at risk.